Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Critical Theory, which is a podcast that's part of the New Books Network. On this episode, I'm talking to Melanie Ramdarshan-Bold, who's an associate professor at the University College London's Centre for Publishing, about her new book, Inclusive Young Adult Fiction, Authors of Colour in the United Kingdom. So welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for inviting me.
It's my pleasure, partially because this is a really great book, it's really interesting, it's full of really great academic work, but also because I think it's really, really important in the kind of current moment that this sort of research is being done into the cultural industries. And it'd be good to get a sense of kind of what motivated you to write the book and I guess kind of like why you think we needed this book now.
What motivated me to write the book was that there have been conversations about the lack of diversity, and I put diversity in quotation marks, in the cultural industries and the publishing industries for a few years now. And I really just wanted to be part of the conversation. And the best way that I know how to get involved in the conversation is through research. So I am a YA fan. I was a secret YA fan, but now I'm quite an obvious YA fan. And I've always been interested in children's and YA books. So I took it upon myself to, you know, undertake this empirical research to either prove or disprove the conversations that were going on. And unfortunately, I proved the authors of colour and the publishing professionals of colour right, because there is a distinct lack of authors of colour that have been published and not much change over the years.
I mean, it's so strange in a way that many things in the book tie in really straightforwardly to lots of different academics kind of work and, you know, making the points you've been trying to make. But there is something, I think, particular that's gone on in publishing about, I guess, kind of a sense that maybe this isn't a problem, or, you know, maybe the kind of genre conventions of different publishing industry mean that, well, you know, some people are represented here, some people are represented there. And it'd be interesting to hear, I guess, kind of like why specifically these things have happened in publishing. Because obviously, you know, we see parallel debates in music, in theatre, in film and television.
So why have they happened in publishing?
Yeah, in particular.
Well, I think I can't speak for the rest of the cultural industries. I mean, we know that the cultural industries is dominated by professionals from white working class, white middle class backgrounds. And obviously there's been an interest in changing this. With regards to the publishing industry, is the publishing industry more white and middle class than other cultural industries? I don't really know.
Oh, it is wildly.
Is it?
Yeah.
And I suppose that therein lies the problem. The publishing industry is also very old and traditional in the way that it's run. Not much has changed since, you know, the end of the patronage system. So it's difficult to actually, not just in terms of the, you know, the people who are working there or the kind of culture that it's creating. I think even the day-to-day activities and the procedures and the practical working activities, they haven't changed that much. So trying to change a system that is so very, very old and so very, very traditional is difficult. And that's maybe why it's more difficult in the publishing industry than the other creative industries.
Could you tell me a bit about how you sort of went about answering these questions and kind of bringing to light these questions of inequality in the publishing industry? What were the sort of like methods and the kind of bigger project the book is part of?
Okay, so I think we discussed this earlier. So the book is actually part of a much larger project which looks at representation of authors of colour in the children's and YA market in the UK. So I've done another project alongside this, a sort of sister project along in collaboration with the Book Trust, which was just published as well. The report was just published, and that employed a similar methodology as well. So I suppose I used a mixed method approach by using a combination of quantitative and qualitative methods. I thought it was really, really important to get some hard facts, some data, some hard facts. So what I did for that is I worked with the metadata team at the lovely metadata team at the British Library with various tags that they recommended. So for the YA fiction one, it was young adult fiction, and for the children's market, it was with other tags as well. So I built this corpus of relevant titles based on this British National Bibliography database, and that was built from all of the books tagged with this phrase young adult fiction, published between for the YA project it was January 2006 and December 2016, and that was thousands and thousands of books. However, the metadata didn't include obviously information such as demographic information such as gender identity, ethnicity, nationality, and also the type of publisher. So whether they were a conglomerate, an independent publisher, if they were self-published, etc. So I added all this information, and the way that this information was identified was through digital and printed paratexts. So on publisher and author websites, author interviews in print and online media, social media was great, you know, so Twitter, Goodreads, etc., and information on book covers, etc. And these were all, you know, self-identified information as well. So I basically segmented the authors by this demographic information and analysed it and coded it, etc. And that's how I came up with the statistics, which are replicated for the Book Trust research as well. And from this corpus of this database, I identified the British authors of colour. So for the YA project, there were only 40. So you know, it was quite easy to contact and interview them. So I contacted the majority of them and interviewed 14 of them, just to delve into the issues a wee bit deeper. For the sister project with the Book Trust, I interviewed 15 creators of colour, so authors, illustrators, and author illustrators as well.
I mean, it's such a stark finding from that, you know, decade of a really booming part of the publishing industry, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Crazy people.
And, you know, when you think about the kind of like questions you encounter in social science about, you know, representativeness, you know, like, are you capturing, you know, the extent of the population and stuff? It's like, actually, there are only 40 people, which is just, you know, appalling when it's kind of laid out in such stark terms.
It is appalling.
I wonder actually is this something that is a kind of like, I don't know, specific issue to young adult fiction? And I guess the way we could get into that is by thinking about what young adult fiction is. You know, you mentioned kind of earlier that sense of being like you know, outing yourself as a fan of so it'd be interesting to know that, I guess, you know, maybe the sort of like what the genre is, give us some kind of why actually these questions of representation matter, you know, really quite majorly to this particular bit of publishing.
So debate, it's really difficult because debates about YA are ongoing, and I think this field of literature isn't as easy to conceptualize as other fields or genres, etc., because like you say, I outed myself as a, you know, a 30 something year old as a YA fan, and but actually recent research has found that the majority of YA readers are over 18, so you know that these books are in one sense being aimed at adolescents, but on the other hand you know, being read widely by adults. And YA's got a really, really interesting history, and it could possibly account for why there's so much interest and so many discussions about diversity in YA as well. So it's been around for a long time, obviously. And the US, there's been quite a lot of history written about the US in particular, and obviously we get a lot of culture imported from the US, so I think it's interesting to look at what's happened there. So basically it started expanding really in the 60s and 70s in the US, when a lot of iconic authors, so you may have heard of Judy Blume, Walter Dean Myers, etc., so they were published a lot during this period. And this was a really interesting period because previously taboo topics such as you know, drug use, sex and sexuality and racism began to feature in YA at this time. And also authors actually began to portray previously underrepresented characters, such as working class and people from ethnic minorities, etc. Before that, there had been YA books before that. So in the 40s and 50s, for example, a lot of the characters were predominantly white and middle class, and they were sort of, you know, they really kind of drew upon that kind of white middle class sensibility and morality. So in the UK in the 60s and 70s, obviously, when we're looking at the publishing industry here, there was a lot going on kind of politically, I suppose. So there were lots of racial tensions in the UK during this period. People of colour, particularly black men, whether they were first generation or otherwise, were subject to discrimination from the police and the wider society. There were lots of riots, etc. Professor Karen Sands O'Connor, for example, she's written a great book about the sort of history of BAME, as it's often called, publishing and authors during this period. And she said she wrote that this actually this sort of fraught racial period was the impetus for many mainstream publishers in the UK to publish quite controversial books about black Britons for adolescent readers. However, these books often had quite short print runs, were not sold in mainstream outlets. And actually, what is really interesting is that the interest in publishing such subjects was actually quite brief. So it was a trend. And I suppose that's something that we worry about today. A lot of people are talking about diversity, in inverted commas, and there is a concern that it will be a bit of a trend. Also, something that that also relates to today is that books that were published during this period were often what are described as problem novels. So they're subject-oriented books, rather focusing on the topic, such as, you know, racism, drugs, whatever, rather than the actual telling of the book. So, and that's something that a lot of the authors of colour that I spoke to complain is not the right word. You know, they were talking about often they are expected to write problem novels based on, you know, their ethnicity or cultural background as well. So what happened to YA after that? So Oh yeah, that's really interesting. So in the 1980s, there was kind of a more of a backlash to these problem novels, and in the 90s as well, and there was a revival of the kind of 1940s and 50s style romance novels, particularly in the US, and YA was obviously very popular during this period. And the titles were typically really like mass market paperback series that focused on like the series rather than the author. And these received quite a lot of criticism because they perpetuated heteronormative and stereotypical gender roles. And obviously, they were also quite often about white middle class protagonists and families, etc. But they were so popular with teenagers, and they kind of instigated a paperback revolution amongst young people. And this was partly because publishers were directly targeting consumers, teenage consumers who were kind of, I suppose, hanging about shopping malls, etc., with their pocket money. Loitering in shopping malls, looking for Sweet Valley High, etc. But that, again, that's really interesting because they were directly targeting teenagers rather than selling solely to teachers and librarians. And I think there are lots of interesting things happening now, focusing on the audience and what the audience wants, rather than what parents and teachers want. And I think something that is often overlooked in publishing for children and young adults is, you know, what do the readers actually want? Where are the readers in the whole process?
Does that connect to, I guess, the sort of impression of young adult fiction now and its relationship with, I guess, Hollywood blockbusters and, you know, the kind of like sense that sort of like, if you offered Sweet Valley High now, it'd be a bit like, that's not what the genre is. Like, you know, get back to the early 90s.
I remember shamelessly stealing my sister's Sweet Valley High books. I think definitely. I think, Harry Potter, which obviously started off as a children's book, but then turned into quite a dark way when Harry, etc., grew up. And blockbuster authors and series like Stephanie Meyer's Twilight and Suzanne Collins' Hunger Games really kind of catapulted YA into the spotlight and demonstrated that it could be incredibly profitable. And also, I think it probably highlighted the crossover appeal of YA to adults as well.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And I guess at the same time as well, those three you sort of highlighted also give us some indication of the sort of questions of diversity that would come up.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's like long-running debates about Harry Potter.
Yes, absolutely. There's the Hunger Games, the whole thing with the ruin, the Hunger Games was fairly disgusting. I don't know if you know the conversation about that. One of the characters, Rue, who was described as having dark skinned in the book, had an African American, Amanda Steinberg, actress play her in the film. There was such a backlash against it, really, really racist backlash against it. You know, people were saying things like, oh, well, you know, she's obviously white. I don't know why they changed her to an African-American actress. And I care less about her now that she's black, etc. It was just horrendous. And obviously there was the backlash against Hermione being black British in the play as well. So, yes. I don't know how to get to that, but yes.
I mean, those kind of things, I guess, are to do with questions of sort of representation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the assumption of who and what characters are.
Yeah, no, exactly. But obviously, like, the flip side to that is questions of, like, production, you know, and kind of who is, you know, allowed in to the industry. And you touched on something really important, you know, that comes up much later in the book, that sense of, the authors you were talking to don't have the same kind of freedoms, you know, or ambivalence about what they're allowed to write, or, you know, what will be perceived to sell and this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I guess one of the sort of big ideas I took away from the early part of the book was this idea about a kind of diversity status quo and the way that there are lots of kind of initiatives, but this kind of term, the diversity state of quo, seems to capture much of what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we all know that the cultural industries are dominated by white middle-class professionals. And obviously there's been an increased interest in changing this recently. There have been so many campaigns and initiatives, etc., to promote diverse, and again, I always use diverse in the quote marks, writing. But also to get more people of colour into the industry as well. So I think most of the initiatives have focused on giving underrepresented groups access to gatekeepers or increasing quotas. However, the same structural inequalities persist. So Animic was in his brilliant book, Race in the Cultural Industries, gives a very great critical look on diversity initiatives, explaining that they're rooted in two really problematic assumptions. A, that the quality and scope of cultural products would actually be improved by increasing the number of cultural producers, diverse cultural producers, and that representation can be achieved through demographic parity. So, yeah, if you increase the number of people of color, then the quality and the, you know, that's fine, that's enough. And if there are 15% of authors of color or 15 or whatever of the publishing industry, that, you know, that's fine. So not actually looking at the quality of the books. And also, I think one of the problems is that a lot of the focus is just getting people of colour into the industry, whether they're publishing professionals or authors of colour, just getting them in the first place. But I think the problem is really just allowing them, like we said, allowing them the space to create what they want and the environment to sustain their career as well. Authors of colour tend to get exploited in the industry in order to make their work more profitable. And as publishers obviously are increasingly focused on profit, so they're likely to cater to existing and dominant market trends as well. So like we said, authors of colour are encouraged to write stories based on their cultural or ethnic backgrounds, often, I don't know, palatable to white tastes and sensibilities. They can perpetuate cultural stereotypes and racial tropes, etc. By doing this as well. So yes, I think instead of, you know, getting people in, it's how do we actually create an environment that is welcoming to sustain the careers of authors of colour. And I think after decades of following versions of the same, often very well-meaning templates for diversity, I think we have to admit that they've failed And we need to move past the idea of diversity. And I suppose one way to do that is maybe stop using the word, like banish it from our vocabularies altogether. Because I think it's quite divisive and it can be polarizing and marginalizing as well. So I don't think there is an official record that diversity initiatives actually change the representation of people of color on or off the page. So we need to think about different ways of changing the culture and changing the system, really.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. And the book makes a really compelling case for that, particularly in terms of the kind of experiences which your authors have talked you through that come up in the later part of the book. And I'm also very interested, and you sort of touched on some of them already, but I'm also interested in the kind of the sense of like consequences of these inequalities, which coalesce around this question of like, what's kind of missing in terms of representations in young adult fiction? You know, what sort of, maybe what kind of Britishness is seen at the moment?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, waking up to, I don't know. I mean, waking up to the, sorry, this is going off topic completely, but waking up to the council election results today kind of shows you the kind of backlash to you know, the past couple of years since the 2016, the results of the referendum. And I think we can't really have a conversation about Britishness without talking about Brexit. And I think, unfortunately, Brexit has brought really antiquated notions of Britishness back to the fore. I was talking about this with a friend the other day. I'm so embarrassed to be. I always describe myself as Scottish because I'm so embarrassed to be British at the moment. And I think, I don't know, Brexit has revealed like really horrible underlying feelings of English nationhood and nationalism that's rooted in these really nostalgic ideas of English identity. And I do think it's important to make the distinction between English and British here, because it's often, you know, Britishness is often and has often been conflated with Englishness. However, I think there are some really fantastic authors, not just YA, but, you know, adult fiction, etc., and nonfiction as well, who are challenging these stereotypical ideas of what it means to be British. So just thinking about British YA authors of colour, there have been some fantastic ones that have been publishing for many years. Mallory Blackman, for example, is just a stalwart of British YA publishing. We've depended a lot, as the research has shown, on imports from the US in the YA publishing industry, particularly about books about race and racism. So what has been really encouraging is to see so many books looking at contemporary British identity. And a lot of these are issue books, and they look at issues such as gentrification, discrimination, inequality, class divides, gang violence, police brutality, etc. I'm just trying to think of some examples. Run Riot by Nikesh Shukla, for example, really encapsulates a post-Brexit Britain. Alex Wheatle's books, which are incredibly, incredibly funny books based in South London. They look at classism, racism, sexism, etc. But these issues actually aren't the main focus of the book. They're just very lovely, funny books about families and friendships. And they have the most wonderful characters. Patrice Lawrence is such a brilliant writer, and she writes a lot about mixed heritage families that are, again, that are often ignored in literary culture, and these families often don't fit the conventional mold. So, you know, there might be foster families, etc. A book that I really loved recently was A Change Is Going to Come, which is an anthology of short stories by British authors of colour, again, aimed at a YA audience. And what I loved about this book is that although the stories do touch upon identity and culture and ethnicity in the UK, they're not centred around ethnicity. And they're all, and we talked about genre conventions as well. It's a book of short stories and some poetry as well. And they're all written in different genres, and show the kind of complexities and intersectionality, of identities, which I think that has been missing from YA books in the past. The intersectionality of identities. All of this is positive, of course. And there have been some brilliant nonfiction books as well recently. These are not YA, but I think they're important. It's actually important to think about them. So, Afua Hirsch's British. And more recently, Akala's Natives. They're two really brilliant books. However, they show that things in terms of racism, discrimination, and how we talk about race in the UK, and I think that's an important thing to think about and note, they haven't really moved on that much since Paul Gilroy's work, for example. I'm just trying to think about more YA books that I can talk about. I'll think about that and I'll come back.
I'm quite interested in, it's not a tension, but the balance here between that kind of sense of celebration of these authors that, you know, have made an impact, both in terms of, you know, the literary quality, but also in terms, you know, being kind of visible as being, you know, economically successful, selling copies and that kind of thing. And then I suppose the sort of wider system that towards the end of the book you engage with as needing kind of like strategies to navigate, to fit in, but also some strategies for resistance. Yeah. And I guess, you know, is the story you've told of those successes, are they going to carry on being those sort of, not one-offs, but, you know, in 10 years, will we be talking about another 40 authors over a period? Or actually are these, you know, kind of strategies of resistance going to be ways of really transforming things?
I'm on the one hand, incredibly pessimistic, but on the other hand, secretly optimistic, because I think there are lots of people doing things at a grassroots level that are inspiring and encouraging and fantastic. You know, I saw Amy Fallone from Nights Of yesterday. Nights Of are an inclusive children's publisher that are really, they have so much energy and drive and they're doing amazing things. They opened a bookshop called Roundtable Books yesterday, which is set in Brixton, and you know, they're doing brilliant things. So I speak to people like Amy, and you know, I can see the energy and the enthusiasm and the passion to do things and make change happen. But it really is happening at you know, on a individual level. And then I go to events where, you know, the head of children's publishing at a major publishing company talks about diverse books and normal books in opposition. So there's a lot to be done. So strategies of resistance. Well, we were talking earlier about what it means to be British, and obviously British authors of colour, whether that's YA or otherwise, they do challenge the perception of what it means to be British and what British literature is. Obviously at the moment, canonical authors who are generally white middle-class men monopolise the definition of Britishness. So by constructing their own notions of Britishness, authors of colour are basically, I suppose, broadening the understanding of what it means to be British today. And I think that in itself is an act of resistance. So writing as an author of colour is just an act of resistance. Doing these excellent, innovative and agile businesses such as Knights of, and also in adult publishing, Own It, led by Crystal Mahay Morgan. You know, having these exciting and agile business models that are very much in tune with the demands of their audiences, really putting readers, particularly underrepresented readers, at the heart of everything they do. You know, that's exciting. But again, these are two, like Amy Fallone and Crystal Mahay Morgan, they're two women of colour, and it's a lot for them to do all the heavy lifting. I think when I start seeing the big publishers really, you know, publishing books with incidental diversity, so where authors of colour are just writing, and yes, they may or may not have characters of colour, and these become the norm, then I'll feel a bit more positive about it. However, actually saying that, you know, seeing the success of Angie Thomas's books and films, etc., are really very exciting as well. Sorry, I don't know if that answered your question.
It did, no, perfectly. What's next for you in terms of, you know, you mentioned a recent project report around kind of children's publishing. I mean, this subject is so kind of important and so live right now.
Yeah.
The temptation, I guess, is to kind of like carry on working on it forever. But, you know, are you thinking about more stuff or something different?
It's really difficult because I think, and this is why I'm really excited that Animic is doing, has got the funding to do his study of the publishing industry. I think, like authors of colour, you feel this kind of burden as a scholar of colour, you feel this burden of responsibility to carry on this work. And it is very, very important, and I know that I will carry it on, but it's a lot. It is a lot. It's, I think, diversity work in general, whether it's for authors or publishing professionals or for scholars of colour, is just exhausting. It's stressful and it's frustrating. So I will continue doing it, but I'm working on other projects as well. A lot of my research has traditionally and historically looked at, you know, the field of restricted production, so culture, which is in the cultural production, which is in the fringes of literary mainstream. So I'm always going to do things, you know, I'm doing a project on translated books, but I'm always going to be interested in authorship and also books by and about marginalized communities as well. So yes, I am going to continue this. I think with the Book Trust report, we will do that every couple of years. I'm looking at 2017 and 2018 at the moment for YA if things have improved, and I really hope that they have improved. But I think just for my own sense, I have to do other things as well, just because it's exhausting. It is really exhausting.
I sort of look forward to seeing the other things as they develop. But for now, I mean, I just recommend really widely. You know, I mean, there's so much more we could have talked about, changes in technology, you know, detailed interview data. But yeah, I just think it's a book that everybody should read.
Thank you very much. Sorry if I was a bit moany at the end. I went to an event last night, a diversity event, and I think I'm still feeling a bit drained from that.